May I speak in the name and to the glory of God. As time passes, I become increasingly convinced that the church is called to focus on serving the world and to make that its chief priority. There are three reasons why I think this. One is that that's what the Bible teaches us. That's the outlook of the Bible. This is how Jesus himself is focused. Jesus talks about service of the world and he sets an example of it. No one can read the Gospels and imagine that Jesus is preoccupied with a narrowly religious world. He's focused on real life. And the second reason why I believe the church should be focused on serving the world is that our current society has such enormous problems, and I'm increasingly convinced that these are spiritual problems. And the world lacks spiritual leadership, largely because the church's attention is elsewhere much of the time, and we need to do what the world needs us to do. The third reason I think this is because the church is just not going to flourish unless it focuses more on the world. Even people who don't know much about Christianity have some intuitive sense that that's what the church ought to be doing. And if it's not, if it becomes focused on its own institutional affairs, they smell a rat and they don't want anything to do with it. And you can see their point of view. So for these various reasons, I am convinced, as I say, that the church must focus on service of the world. And that means a big change in the kind of sense of direction that there is between church and the world. I think we often see the secular world as a pool of people who can potentially be recruited into the church, who can be brought into the church. What I think we need to do instead is to see the secular world as a place into which we can go out in service. Of course, if there are going to be anyone in the church to go out and serve the world, we need people to come in and join us and help us to do that. But our question when people join the church should be, how can we serve them? How can they help us to serve the world, rather than how can they help us to prop up religious institutions? We need a fundamental change of direction if things are to work out in the way they need to do. But even if we get things right up to that point, then I think there's still a tendency for things to go wrong in a more subtle way. We don't focus on the world in the sense of understanding it as God's world. We fall into the trap about which Simon Phipps was speaking in the reading we heard from him this morning, of thinking that it's the church where God belongs, and the secular world out there is somehow godless. And it's our job to take God out into this secular world, because otherwise he wouldn't be there. It's a deeply heretical point of view. All creation belongs to God and is upheld by God, including what we presume to call secular society. There is no secular society that is godless. It's not our job to take him there. God has gone ahead of us, as Jesus told us he had gone ahead of them to Galilee. And when we go into the secular world to serve it as Christians, the first thing we need to do is to attend to how God is speaking to us in and through the secular world, to see how he's challenging us in and through the secular world, so we can work with him there as his foot soldiers, rather than imagining we're having to do it all ourselves. No good comes of that. Let me put that on hold and start this sermon in a slightly different place and then join things together. A few hundred years ago, about the time when experimental science was getting going, people quite often spoke of the two books of God. There was, of course, the book of Scripture, where you read about God, but there was also a book of nature where you could read about God. different kinds of books, of course. The scripture talks explicitly about God, whereas if you're discerning the imprint of God in nature, you have to look for it implicitly there. You have to learn to read it, to discern it. And perhaps you need the eyes of faith to do that. It's a bit like what that Eucharistic hymn speaks of, faith alone, the true heart waketh to behold the mystery. I think something similar happens when we're looking at the book of nature to see God there. Faith alone needs to awaken our hearts so we can discern the mystery. From the outset, science was used as a handmaiden in this process, and it's been used increasingly effectively, and I think we're now quite good at reading nature in a way that enables us to see the unfolding purposes of God there. And towards the end of this month, I'll be giving a short series of midweek talks when I'll be talking about God and science and unpacking some of the ways in which science has been used to help us to read the book of nature. Why am I talking about this now? Because I think if we allow that there is a book of nature in which we can read God, there surely must also be a book of humanity in which we can read God. If we can read the imprint of God in the natural world, surely we must also be able to read it in human society as well. And there is actually far stronger support in the Bible for that project of reading the book of humanity in a way that interprets how God is active there than there is for this Enlightenment project of reading the book of nature. But reading the book of humanity as Christians is something that's been curiously neglected by the church for a long, long time. We can look at the Old Testament story we heard this morning as an object lesson in how to do that. It's a story of God speaking to Moses through the secular world. Moses, an Israelite, was brought up in the royal household in Egypt, in a different world. He strays out to see what's happening to his Israelite people. Almost, it seems, in the spirit of idle curiosity, just wandering out of the palace to see what's happening to the Israelites. And what he sees is an Israelite being abused by an Egyptian officer. And his conscience is stirred, his feelings are aroused, and there starts to grow within him a commitment to do something about that. That's God speaking to Moses through the secular world. This was a secular event, nothing particularly religious about it. God cares about the oppressed Israelites, so does Moses, and their joint concern brings them together. Then Moses' response is problematic in some ways. He kills the Egyptian, maybe not the best thing to do. Then he gets a bit overbearing with some of his own Israelite people. Then he gets scared and runs away and spends quite a long interval in the land of Midian. But all the time, this stirring of his heart and conscience that has come about through God speaking to him through events in the secular world, that is still there, and he is primed for God to speak to him again, as God does through a bush that is on fire. Again, nothing particularly religious about a bush burning. It's again a secular event through which God speaks to Moses. If we insist on making that distinction between the religious and the secular. And God doesn't call Moses off into some little religious world where God can be served privately. God sends Moses back into the thick of the secular world, where he's seen the oppression of the Israelites by the Egyptians, to do something about that. Of course, Moses feels inadequate, as every servant of God feels inadequate when they're called. But he hears the calling and he obeys. He goes back into the secular world to bring his concern for the plight of his Israelite people to some kind of fruition, to bring them some kind of liberty. Let's bring all this up to date and see how we can apply it in our own society. And I think it's not an accident that God speaks to Moses through things that are going wrong, through trials and tribulations. It's probably not the only way that God can speak to us through the secular world, but I think it's often the way it happens. That whenever there are human problems, and there are so often human problems, God speaks to us through them, and he challenges us through them. He says to us, as he said to Moses, what are you going to do about it? Do you actually care, as I care? And if you do care, what are you going to do? And very often, behind these human problems that we encounter in society, there are spiritual reasons, and we often need spiritual resources to respond effectively to our human problems. So that's another part of God's response, that through facing us with problems in our society, God is often, I think, challenging us to open ourselves to spiritual resources, to develop the spiritual resources we need to tackle these problems. And if we do that, then humanity moves on. It moves closer to God, but does that through responding effectively to our secular social problems. And as we ponder these things, then I think we start to discern a pattern of what happens in so-called secular society. That just as Jesus' death is followed by resurrection, so in human society there's a pattern of trials and tribulations being followed by some kind of renewal. Crisis leads into renewal. It's the pattern that Arnold Toynbee talks about in his great book, Study of History, where he argued that there's a universal pattern in civilizations. They flourish and then they decay. They decay into what he called a time of trouble. But out of that time of trouble, a new civilization can be born that is in some ways stronger than the old one. And that rebirth may call for new resources. Just as personal crises can lead people to strengthen their inner resources, just as crises in relationships can leave a relationship stronger than it was before, so a crisis in human society can lead humanity to take a leap forward, to align itself more closely with God's purposes, to open itself to spiritual resources. We face so many challenges in our world today. Challenges of war and peace, of economic stability and prosperity, of threats to the environment and to the sustainability of our way of life. And through each of these and many others, I believe God is speaking to us, rousing us from our indifference, as he roused Moses from his, promising us the possibility of new life, as he promised freedom to the Israelites, and challenging us to dig deep, to align ourselves more closely with the spiritual resources we need if we're to tackle our problems. And I think there's often an important difference between how Christians and non-Christians respond to crises in our society. I think non-Christians often want to get back to business as usual as much as they can and as soon as they can. It's a question of crisis. What crisis? Why need we change anything? But I believe we Christians are potentially more willing to recognize the crisis for what it is, to accept the challenge, to recognize that things are going to have to change, and to seek some kind of renewal beyond the crisis, some deeper blessing out of whatever problems beset us. I've set all this out in very broad outline, and I don't think it's the only way in which God speaks to us in secular society. Just to mention briefly some other ways in which God can speak to us, Jesus himself was remarkably inclusive, resisting the idea that anyone was beyond the pale. And the church often overlooks that. But it's sometimes through secular society that we're driven back to recognize how inclusive Jesus actually was. Jesus was very inclusive about women, very affirming of them. Christians have been slow to recognize that, but I think the movement towards affirmation of women in secular society has opened the eyes of many Christians to what's in its own tradition, if only they look. And it's hard to imagine Jesus objecting to gays or trans people any more than he objected to people who were regarded as on the fringe of his own society, tax gatherers, lepers, Samaritans, and the rest. But the church has been very slow to learn that. And the remarkable upsurge of interest in spirituality in our society can challenge the Christian church to take its spiritual tradition of meditation and mysticism more seriously than it often has. It can challenge the church to spiritual renewal. And I wish the church would pick up that challenge more strongly than it does, rather than just being sort of picky about the vagueness of the word spirituality. But I mentioned these specific ways in which God can speak to us through secular society only really to illustrate my general point, which is that God does speak to us and to all humanity through what we please to call secular society, but which is actually upheld by God all the time. And as Christians, we need to get back to recognizing that society, like all of creation, belongs to God. It is not godless. And we're here as Christians to serve it, as Jesus did. And if we're to serve society in God's name, we need to start by paying attention to what God is saying to us through secular society. We need to learn to read the book of humanity and to discern God's imprint there so we can work with him in what we think of as a godless secular society. May it be so.